Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? The world running on EVs and renewable energy? Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't love junior mints. I just don't hate them. I don't understand why they are treated like second-class candy.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Oh, there's a, you there's don't a understand why a candy that is basically toothpaste wrapped up in stale chocolate is treated like a second-class candy. All right, I get it. It's a good, valid question.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Is there a time to change? You know, the three teams I've drafted this year, second-class candy is pretty good.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
No time left for that. Fantasy season is over. The playoff fantasy season, however, is...
Oh, I can't wait.
Just revving up.
Can't wait.
No. You're not in the streets drafting playoff teams? Which do you like more?
I'm not even near the sidewalks.
Do you like the idea of a pick one player per team tournament? Where you and I could have some of the same players, but you can't pick more than one guy per team. Those are fun.
Sure. I've done that before. Yeah.
You have?
Yeah.
And then there are the ones like the underdog ones.
With you, and I lost all my money.
Is that right? Tyler Dunn joining us now on the Western Hotline. I don't believe that story.
Yeah, quickly change the subject.
Well, good to see you get back on your feet after whatever that was. Tyler, how are you? Happy New Year.
Are we still saying Happy New Year? I think enough time has passed. I don't know if I want to say it back.
That's the last time I'm not going to bristle audibly at hearing it.
I'm fine now. To wrap it up here. I'm not offended.
I saw a guy yesterday here that I hadn't seen since really even before any of the holidays, and he said Happy New Year to me, and it was all I could do, and I'd say, that's it, though. Don't you dare say it. But I'm assuming this person would not say it again today because he got it out of the way yesterday.
It's still not a week.
You know what? We are within a week, but I still want to go full like Dennis Reynolds screaming at the neighbor when they move to the suburbs. I just don't. It's just too chipper when you're this far removed. It's not even really a holiday. We're just flipping the calendar. Right. Time moves on.
I appreciate that it's not even been a week yet. But when it's the middle of last week and we went through a whole weekend and a whole NFL weekend, I'm done. It's over.
All right. Fine.
Take the tree down already.
Banging up on Chope. I like it. We outnumber him here.
And our tree is down, by the way, so I don't even know what I'm being accused of. But maybe chipper was the card to play here, Tyler. You and Sean McDermott at length, right. Seems very positive and mutual respect here. I think maybe, and I know you were on the station yesterday too, so maybe you were asked this, but a lot of Bills fans who have not at all forgotten what you wrote last year, I mean, super long form about McDermott and what's happened over the last few years, might be interested in the backstory here. And I personally think it looks good on McDermott that he was willing to accommodate.
It does. Absolutely. 100%. And I haven't really spoken on this a heck of a lot. I don't think he'd mind. I'm not going to get into like the the literal conversations that we've had, you know, over the past year. But I did hear from Sean the day after that series ran, I believe. And it was calm. It was cordial. It was respectful. He said he would like to get together in the off season to kind of get to know each other. And that's exactly what we did at the Combine in Indianapolis. We sat down for, hell, I don't know, an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, barely talked about the series, just kind of got to know each other. And I think he kind of wanted to know in so many words what I did at Go Long and just expressed, look, living here, a lot of readers, a lot of subscribers are obviously Buffalonians, Bills fans. I've given them from here. I was at the Buffalo News. I've written about the Bills a ton. And it would be great to be in the building, be around. And, hey, since then, that's what I've been doing, writing a lot of features, sat down with Brandon Bean in spring, Rasul Douglas, Ray Davis, to name a few. Damar Hamlin did some stories on them. And I just on the verge of this postseason reached out to the Bills and wanted to see if Sean would like to sit down. And I thought it'd be 15, 20 minutes. I mean, these coaches are creatures of habit, right? It's hard enough to sit down with a coach in May for, you know, an hour, let alone January. But Sean was unbelievably accommodating with his time. And once he got rolling, as you saw, I really felt like it only got better and better and more passion, you know, more authenticity, yep. Just honesty came pouring out of him. You can really see and feel. I mean, he got emotional thinking about what it would mean to bring a championship to this city, how it would really change this city forever. It was an incredible conversation. To your point, Mike, like, this is rare. I'm telling you. I mean, hell, we've talked about Aaron Rodgers and the Packers and that story I did, whatever it was, 6 years ago at Bleacher Report. I don't think the Packers are going to be rolling out the red carpet. Right. I mean, Rodgers went to another team and nuked the building, and everything I hear is there's still some animosity on their end. So, you know, give the Bills credit. I'm not blowing smoke. Like, give the Bills PR department credit. Give Sean McDermott number one credit because I think we both handled it professionally. And yeah, look, if they go out and they lose to Denver, obviously you're right critical about it, just like you guys would talk critically about
sure.
it on the radio, and I think he understands that.
How much, Tyler, if you'll take a follow-up on this subject, because I think the audience would be interested in it too, and I, as your friend and a peer, am interested in it, because I wonder when you started down that path with him, when he reached out, how much were your antenna up for, like, I'm about to get worked? You know, is he, you know, if at all? I mean, I'm honestly asking, because I think we've all probably been in situations where, you know, you want to do the right thing and be courteous, certainly give someone an opportunity to explain themselves, but you also might in the back of your mind be thinking, like, this I don't know, how much am I going to trust all this?
You know, I started covering the NFL around 2010. And so we're talking, whatever, 14, going on 15 years. So along the way, you're going to write things that are critical, and especially at Go Long, trying to do theories and talking to as many people as you possibly can on these longer pieces, players, coaches, scouts, you know, people who have passed through the building. I guess it's a similar kind of piece on the New York Giants and Dave Gettleman and how ugly it really was there at the end. And so there was somebody with that organization who did exactly what you kind of said. It gave me a call, and it was quite different. And that's just part of it. Like, if that's – they have every right to kind of read you the riot act if they're unhappy with something. I mean, you obviously know that getting into it, and you try to talk to as many people as you possibly can to fully tell the story of – whatever it is. And so, yeah, that's always a possibility, but it was never that, never anything remotely close to that. It's been unbelievably professional from that day after it ran through the conversation there in Indianapolis, through being around the team. And it does say a hell of a lot about Sean McDermott.
Well, I appreciate you taking the question and certainly the response to it. How did you find him? Here, like, what really? I mean, I read the piece; it was fantastic. There was a lot of stuff in there that I don't think the average person would have any way to know about him. I'm just kind of curious, like, how you found him and like how much he's changed since you would have first encountered him.
That's where it's interesting, because he is quick to say, like, he wasn't just one person and then completely evolved into a different person in 365 days. That being said, he kind of bullet pointed and shared several stories and several ways that he has evolved. I mean, he's doing snow angels with Josh Allen, crying out loud. Like, I don't think that Sean McDermott, kind of instilling the culture in 2017, would recognize that one. And he brought up a conversation that he had with Kale Sanderson, the former Olympian. He's the wrestling coach at Penn State now. And I believe this was this year. He called it like an enlightening moment for him. And Sanderson told him that he realized that being a head coach and what he did was like not all that important. When he realized that, he became a better head coach. And I was like, what does that mean? And the way that Sean put it, it's like, what do these players need from me right now? Like, how can I fill the gaps? How can I stand in a gap if they need me? He said it's like being a dad. What you do for your kids, what you do for your wife, what do they need from you right in that moment? That's how he kind of views being a head coach for this team. So I think that's going to lead to maybe being a little more loose, doing those snow angels and letting players play, letting players believe, looking at that glass half full instead of half empty. He brought up sending Tyler Bass out there for whatever it was, a 61, 62-yard field goal, and like going out there to win the game, not thinking of what can go wrong after he misses that extra point. And I think that psychologically, maybe they tried to get to that place with the fake punt to Damar Hamlin against the Chiefs at home after Mahomes went up and down the field twice. But I think it does take, months to kind of get to that place, months to psychologically get your players to believe. So throughout this hour-long conversation, right in his office, we're hanging out right on his furniture in there, he did kind of bring up, 53 guys, how in the hell you try to get all of them to play freely, because it's not easy to do, and this is the challenge every head coach faces.
The challenge with Tyler Dunn here on WGR, we all face after a season ends, if it doesn't end in a Super Bowl win, is like, all right, well, why? What happened? And I think you'd agree. I mean, a lot of times we probably draw incomplete conclusions, if not the wrong conclusions. A lot of time is spent talking about a team's mental state, the pressure, confidence, all that kind of stuff. And it's really just, there's so many players involved and coaches, and it's really hard to know. But since I've basically set this up to be an unanswerable question for you, I just wonder, how do you feel about what that these changes all add up to here? It's the 2 seed again. Kansas City is going to have home field and the bye, of course, and they're the team to beat. Do you think all of these changes and what you're describing here from McDermott and maybe the residual effects are key to a different outcome?
Well, we're about to find out. At one point I asked Sean, what makes this team different than whatever it was, the previous six that he's taken to the playoffs. And in so many words, he brought up the unselfishness, and he doesn't need to say the name Stephon Diggs. He doesn't need to point out to these specifics. But, I mean, when you remove a Stephon Diggs from the equation, I wasn't so quick to just say, hey, don't let the door hit you in the way. I mean, he was damn good. They needed him at that time to go from good to great. I mean, he just was that electroshock to the roster that they absolutely needed at that time. But I think 4 years later, things kind of wore thin, and removing him kind of created this overall. I mean, there is something to this everyone eats thing. I mean, it is real. Like, sure, Patrick Surtain can take away half the field, but that's why you can throw the ball to literally anybody who's out there. But I think, to answer your question, I think that Josh Allen has become more of a leader. And this is a quarterback who's he's a Fireball, California, son of a farmhand. He's going to do what he's told. This is what so many of his friends, so many of his teammates have told me over the years. Like, he's not the type to just ball up a fist and scream in the ear hole of a teammate and do that kind of stuff you see out of Brady and Manning and Rodgers, all of these guys. But by removing Diggs, you've got this leadership vacuum, somebody to step up into that role. And Sean McDermott referenced a conversation that he had with Josh Allen over the offseason down these lines. I think that they wanted him to take more of an active leadership role this season, and he has. So there's that component. There's the on-field component. Look, I wasn't so sure there was this middle ground where you could kind of tell Josh Allen to dial it back at times, maybe don't take this risk or that risk. You know, Sean, he's a defensive coach. He knows the value of turnovers, and he has really been praising Allen for being intentional with his decisions while still being able to take those calculated risks. So it's all about Josh Allen for this team always. And this year, more than any other year, he has kind of found that utopian state where he's not making those killer mistakes, and he's leading, and this team's having a lot of fun. They're kind of going back into this playoff moment. Experience for sure, and they're trying to learn from 13 seconds in all those games. But like Brandon Bean said in the spring, there's a lot of guys on this team who don't have those quote-unquote scars. Like they weren't around for 13 seconds. They weren't around for some of these games, and there's a value to that as well.
So what's in the binder, Tyler? You write about the Tyler Dunn, golongtd.com, long piece, one-on-one with Sean McDermott. A lot of in-depth stuff in there. And McDermott, at one point, the way you portray this, like, gets this binder out. About this is to be like scenarios, what we've learned, you know, just sort of things that you can try to work through that could happen on a game day. Like, how much of a look at that binder did you get? Because I was intrigued by it. Obviously, I'm bringing it up.
And I thought his answer to that question would be something else. So I just asked him, like, these playoff losses, do you try to just bury those and forget about them, never thinking of them again, or use them? And before I even got to the or use them, I mean, he's shaking his head. No, there's no way he buries them. And he pops off his chair in his office, goes over to his desk, and grabs it. It was like a packet of papers stapled in the corner. Not a full binder, but there was a lot there. It was a pretty thick set of papers there. And he brings it back. He's flipping through it. And he goes, I can't let you read this. I can't let you see it. But we can talk about it. So I wish my eyes could take in mm-hmm. what was typed out on these papers in a rapid rate. But he lifted off a few of the sections, like mindset, the game, distractions, first round bye, the Super Bowl. This is the strength of Sean McDermott. I mean, he is going to be unbelievably prepared. Like, if you're playing devil's advocate, you could say, well, can you be too prepared for something? Can you be overthinking mm-hmm. a game when it's played on human instinct and split-second decisions? We'll see, but like the way he approaches it is to try to be prepared for every possible scenario on the field, off the field, that they could see. And that being said, he also noted, like, it's no two situations are going to be the same. You're going to see things you've never experienced as a coach.
At the risk of oversimplifying it, like, these are areas where I always would have assumed McDermott was really thorough. You know, like, he absolutely comes off as authentic and driven and all these things. I think what we probably will get to, Tyler, in the playoffs at least once is whatever the moment is he willing to be aggressive? Like, for me, I'm not sure if his instinct is to sort of line up with that. That's different examples that we can rattle off over the years. In the regular season, they go for fourth down plenty, and they've been aggressive enough. They've also been very efficient on most of those plays. Allen helps. But that's it, right? These are going to be close games. And will he be willing to take that Dan Campbell-esque chance, and then, if you even consider it a gamble, and then B, what's the play call? Like, what? McDermott, for me, is more the guy calling timeout before you snap the ball so I can make sure everybody's lined up right. What did you call it? The Kodak
play. Kodak. Yeah, that's the Kodak.
So that's what I'm waiting on.
I'm with you, Mike. I mean, we don't know until we see this coach in that moment. I don't think we really know what that moment's going to be. Is it AFC championship game, end of the first half, you drive down the field and you take a chip shot field goal when this is a track meet, you've got to keep up? Is it Cincinnati, you know, you can't stop Joe Burrow, Joe Mixon, they're doing whatever you want, and you know, you probably should go for that, whatever it was, a 4th-and-2, last play of the third quarter, and you just kind of punt it away. You've got to be aggressive, and you're dealing with Mahomes and Lamar and Derrick Henry and all this firepower in the AFC. You've got the best player in the sport having his best season. So I think that there's some proof that maybe he's turned a corner, like fourth and two, Chiefs. You get the field goal up by five, or you can end the game right there. Steve Spagnuolo has the perfect call, and it doesn't even matter because Josh Allen just takes off. Maybe that was a moment that kind of helps you be aggressive in the playoffs. But he does take it case by case. And he also brought up, the Patriots game at home and his decision to kick a field goal versus going for it on fourth and two. He said they would have only had so many seconds anyways at the end of the half. And he admitted, I heard the boos. He goes, they want me to go for it every time. He's going to take it case by case. He's not going to go full Dan Campbell. But you got to go semi-Dan Campbell, especially when you've got Josh Allen. And we're about to find out if he's willing to put the pedal to the metal now.
There it is.
How do you like this matchup?
Okay.
Denver's defense, I guess the metrics are good. I'm sure you guys have been getting into it all. The EPA, number one, sacks, one, points allowed, two, something like that. They've got three, four different pass rushers. One of, if not the best, shutdown corner. But I can't talk myself into this game being overly competitive. I think that Bo Nix has been fine. I can't get that Chargers Thursday nighter out of my head where he was averaging 3.3 air yards and dinking and dunking. And Sean Payton is a Super Bowl winning coach. He'll probably put the right plays, in his headset and tell him where to go with the football. But we have seen the Bills excel against young quarterbacks in inclement weather, even if it's just, in the 20s, what have you. I think they'll have their way with Bo Nix and win this pretty handily. But
whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping and have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle all your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off USPS and UPS. Add flexibility to your day with Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's Stamps.com/program.
I don't think you never know. That's the thing. It's paralysis by analysis. We got a full week to talk about these games. By the end of it, I think everybody will kind of go round and round. I just can't get past the fact that the Bills are home or at home. They've been dominant at home, and everybody wants to fast forward to Josh Allen versus Lamar Jackson.
That last point is the scary part for me. It's not a given. 2 9-10 point favorites this week, and they both cannot afford losses, the Bills and the Ravens. Very good, Tyler. Good work as always. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
And an early happy Martin Luther King Day to Tyler Dunn. we don't want to miss the opportunity to share the sentiment. That's it. Tyler Dunn, golongtd.com. 803-0550 for your calls, your thoughts on Bills Broncos. We will talk to Ross Tucker today coming up at 5. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
There really doesn't need to be much of a balance because, my focus is strictly on trying to win a Super Bowl here. Us trying to find a way to win this game this week. And, the reality of it is some of the interviews, if interviews happen, would be next week. So really nothing for me to even think about right now and just kind of focus on Denver. And do I aspire to be a head coach? Yeah, I would love to, given the right opportunity. And, I'm honored to even, the name be thrown out there. But right now, just my focus is finding a way to win a football game this week.
Joe Brady, a candidate in a few spots. New Orleans, according to Bet Online, he is the favorite, but as I said earlier when mentioning that, I don't know what they really know. Nobody's even talked yet, just that he was in New Orleans. So maybe that makes him the favorite. Also, you might think, who was their last coach, right? Like the Saints have been into Dennis Allen and then Vizzy, the special teams guy, filled in for him, and that would be their turn to get somebody young and offensive.
Yeah, you'd think. But, man, I don't know. That's another job. Aren't they still finally maybe now getting around to digging out of all the kicking it forward they did, even going back to Breeze being there? I feel like they're still digging out.
Yeah.
Hasn't that been their story? They should have stopped as soon as he stopped, they should have stopped, but they kept going. And they're still in a very, very tough place, at least with regard to that. Although that doesn't have to stop you from winning. Like, I'm giving you the preamble to, like, that's not a very desirable job. But I don't know. The Broncos are in the playoffs with the most dead cap money in the history of the league. So, I mean, you can get by. You just have to hit your quarterback, you know, in the draft if he's going to play as a rookie, or find another cheap guy, and you can get by. And because Denver definitely more than got by. I mean, they made the playoffs.
I guess so. I guess they did. Coaching vacancies, the Raiders have one now. Maybe it'll be Deion Sanders or Doug Peterson. Does he get another chance?
I think he needs some time with the headset in the booth calling plays.
Take a step back.
Yeah, I think it would do him good. Maybe even Alabama or something. I don't know, but I think he needs to just go put an offense together and have everybody go, "Oh, look at that."
But if I'm the presumably defensive minded coach that gets a job and then hires him, better get the job done because I've got a Super Bowl winner in the booth.
Yep.
That, you know, right over my shoulder. I don't love that. With Peterson out in Jacksonville, technically there are six Super Bowl winning active head coaches. Tyler Dunn mentioned Sean Payton as one. Andy Reid, of course. John Harbaugh. Sean McVay. Mike McCarthy. Mike Tomlin. I went all the way back to, like, Super Bowl I, by the way, just now, making sure there was nobody
hanging around
from
there,
right? Like a Vermeil or somebody getting right. back in. Tom Flores,
right?
Okay. That I might have forgotten about getting back in, but I don't think so.
No.
I think that's it.
You're good, yeah.
Belichick getting back in, if he were to do that, would be maybe more Super Bowls than all these guys put together. Not quite. Reed has three.
Right. Is that, I wonder year to year if that's, is that a lower, like year to year, are there usually more active Super Bowl winning coaches or fewer? I wonder. I don't know.
Well, we had Peterson until yesterday, and Belichick winning so many takes a big chunk out of it.
Right.
He leaves. Carroll left last year.
And there are, it's like younger and younger guys all the time. So it's like having one in the, you know, in the trunk of your car when you pull up to start your new job is not as much of a requirement, I think, as maybe it used to be. I don't think it's still, you'd like, well, you got a guy that won, you'd like to maybe get your hands on that guy. But I feel like that's not as, it's not as important as it's been since we're looking for the offensive guru. I'm looking for a guy that can work with quarterbacks. I'm looking for a guy that can instill culture here. And I don't know that the Super Bowl is as much of a draw, but it feels like maybe we're at an all-time low of active coaches who've won it, just because a lot of guys, Belichick especially, being out now.
1-7?
Yep.
Do we hate Sean Payton?
I definitely don't like Sean Payton.
I don't like him.
No.
Do we respect him? Kind of have to.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess he's good. I guess he's good.
I think it was easy if you were in a, like, I don't really like this guy very much position, and he goes to Denver, and it goes the way it went last year with Wilson. It's just, you know, what a joke, right? And this guy was supposed to fix everything, and he didn't. And I did not expect them to dig out at this fast. I didn't think Bo Nix was a very good idea. Obviously, Sean Payton was right about that. And to have, I mean, that team has not been to the playoffs since Super Bowl 50, like at all. Just no, nothing. And to have the wreckage of the Wilson, you know, kicking him to the curb and then have all that money hanging there, it's one of the best coaching jobs maybe ever. Like, targeting the guy, being right, and then implementing your stuff well enough to win 10 games and get to the playoffs in year one with him without the benefit of, I mean, how much dead money total did they have this year? I mean, it's got to be some gross amount. I don't know if the Wilson is split up into two entities or not, but that's a pretty great job he's done there. So, yes, I think I respect him now more than I think maybe I ever have. And I know he did a lot in New Orleans, but this has been a tremendous job, I think, in Denver so far.
Knicks is a really interesting case study. I mean, he's barely younger than Fields, who's been in the league for 4 years. Knicks and Penix both came in kind of old.
Yep.
But in a world where we're always trying to figure out and better understand which quarterbacks are going to be the right ones in the draft, you used to the experience, the age has always been a strike against any position, like wide receiver maybe especially, but the quarterbacks who took time to develop, like Knicks, who had the big year at Oregon but wasn't great at Auburn, right? Just sort of okay.
Yeah, it's like his earlier college career was held against him despite how good he was at Oregon.
Yep, and the reason, well, one reason would be that I would listen to is just historic stuff where it goes back to the draft and the wide receivers we talked about all the time, where historically this particular profile is likelier to fail.
Right.
And you want a quarterback prospect, well, guess what? You want Caleb Williams, who was incredible 2 or 3 years ago, even though he wasn't in his last year of college football, mm-hmm. And he did not have a good season. So that's the point. You want somebody that pops earlier. Jaden Daniels didn't. Jaden Daniels was at Arizona State and was a flop there and went to LSU.
Incredible year at LSU and ends up being, what, second pick? And here we are.
So it's a little bit upside down this year in that. And then where, you know, Daniels wins the Heisman and has the athletic profile, Knicks really didn't. And just seemed like if it was going to work, and it needed to very badly for such a high draft pick for a guy with his tools, it kind of had to be this coach.
Yep.
Where he's going to throw the ball short all the time and come along that way.
I would say what I know I'm guilty of this about Knicks. I don't know. I don't want to speak for anyone else. I mean, I'm also not a scout poring over tape. But I think as someone who talks for a living about these guys, I think it's awfully easy to get to a spot with a guy like Knicks. And Penix could have been exactly the same thing, although I liked Penix more in college than I liked Knicks, is you just think, well, he's played so much college football. If he were that good, he'd be gone already. Like, what are you doing playing, you know, all these years? You must not be that good. And, you know, what that misses is that either A, the right fit hasn't been there. There could be a variety of things that could undo a single season for you. And, you know, the right scheme fit matters. And like I was rolling my eyes with anyone else that was rolling their eyes about Sean Payton, like, handpicking this guy. He's perfect for what I want to do. Well, guess what? He's perfect for what he wanted to do. He knew what he was doing there. And me being bored by Bo Nix because he played 4 years ago at Auburn is not any kind of insightful analysis. It's lazy. And I'm just telling it like it is. I think a lot of people do that.
I guess it's maybe a little bit early for it's like an obvious win. Maybe not, but I think I want to say that because the idea here, we've talked about Miami and these teams where their guys are like just good or even just very good, but not great. So what do you make in terms of an investment? I guess it's one thing to put down $50 million a year and another to, you know, bring a guy in as a rookie and see what you have. Teams should always, when you don't have the answer at quarterback, you should always be willing to try that, at least. So Denver gets credit for that. And it's gone very well. They might end up being a team in 2 or 3 years where, like, maybe the Niners are now. Like, oh, geez.
Right.
Our guy is good. It's definitely a win.
This works, but
I don't know. How good? What's the ceiling? That could be.
All right. What does my team look like when I'm spending $60 million on that guy? And, you know, obviously that you know, you got to take that out of somewhere. And so, you know, the supporting cast starts to suffer. And are you someone who can sort of do what Josh Allen is getting credit, and I think largely rightly so, for doing here, which is elevating the whole operation with a kind of a cast of characters that a lot of us were looking at in the summer and even into the season going, I don't know, there's enough there. And all they were was the second highest scoring team, and he's an MVP, the favorite for the MVP. That's a very different world than Brock Purdy. And I think probably ultimately Bo Nix. Like, I don't think Bo Nix has the ceiling anywhere near enough to get into that conversation. But can you win now while he's on the rookie contract? They're already in the playoffs. They're off to a great start with that. And they'll have more resources as they get clear of the Wilson stuff and all the other dead money. You know, maybe not necessarily this first season, but still, they'll have a couple of years of rookie Bo Nix to be able to supplement their roster significantly, I would think.
It seems likely that they will get to hold on to the playoff spot, Denver, that they earned, despite the fact that almost 25,000 people have signed a petition to get the Bengals into the playoffs.
Is that right?
So there's a petition. Maybe it's up to the full. The goal was 25,000. I saw just short of 24,000. The point is that the Chiefs laid down in Denver.
Oh, I see.
To keep the Bengals out.
Yeah.
And the Bengals should get an additional spot. Could you be friends with anybody that would sign a petition like that? Could you, like, if somebody close to you told you.
I'm not even sure if I can be friends with you anymore because you've posed this question to me. No, absolutely not.
If somebody in your life was excited to tell you about how he signed the petition, has a petition ever worked? Maybe
sure.
To get something on the school lunch menu change?
Sure, I think, yes. I think
that's worked.
I think petitions have, yes. I don't know what kind of percentage, you know, I don't know what kind of bet it is, but yes, I'm sure it's worked.
We're going to sign a petition to get the Bengals a playoff spot because we don't think the Chiefs tried hard enough against Denver. It would be annoying to see, if you're the Bengals, to see that happen, but
sure.
I don't think a petition is really necessary.
I don't know. Is someone talking on the Ohio state legislature floor about this thing?
You would think.
Let's go already.
Cheap votes.
Oh my Lord. Yeah. No,
it's not even necessarily real, and you're so mad about it.
Can't do it. Cannot do it.
The petition is real, and it's meaningless.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, maybe it feels good.
No, it doesn't.
If family members, I'm thinking of a couple in particular, told me. My family members, that they signed this petition.
You would say, of course you did.
I think it'd be over. a Christmas card at the most.
Right.
But the days of the gift exchange, and I don't think I could respect them ever again.
Yep. No, it's a deal breaker.
Ross Tucker coming up at 5. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR. Welcome back. You just heard it. Ross coming up at the top of the hour, presumably back from the Bahamas. If he were still in the Bahamas, it meant that he went to Nashville for Texans, Titans, and then back to the Bahamas.
That would be weird.
Yeah, I don't think that would be the case. Really gotten hooked on this. You were going to say something about Ross or the Bahamas or UB.
Or none of the above.
Okay.
I got a speeding ticket in the mail yesterday.
In the mail?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm going to just ignore it and see what happens.
I don't believe you. I don't think you would do that.
I think I'm gonna try it. I think I can get away with it. I like my chances.
What? Well, how do you get a speeding ticket in the mail? Cameras? Like that kind of thing?
Yep. But I don't think they're gonna get me. I think if I just lay low, I think I'll get away with it.
Not mention it on the air?
Definitely don't want to talk about it on the air, that I have the speeding ticket that I'm going to get. 93 and an 80.
Really?
Yeah.
Where was this?
Spain.
Okay. You got a speeding ticket
I got a speeding ticket from Spain in the mail today, yesterday when I got home.
Well, they're
from
not going to walk it over.
Right. But I was the date of the offense, the 93 kilometers in an 80 kilometers.
Okay, that's
right. That was a clue right there that it was not local. 93 and an 80. Where's there an 80? Is there 80 in Texas? Maybe?
Arizona.
Yeah. Right. So June 28th is the date of the offense. But I got clocked doing 93 and an 80 in Falset, Spain.
Iconic Falset, Spain.
Yes. Spain. I'm pretty sure this was on a beer run.
That's a run, all right.
After we had this traumatic experience that you weren't around for me to tell the story about, where we went through this tiny town, and the road just got tighter and tighter and tighter around us until it felt like we were in a tunnel of 13th century buildings.
You told me that story.
And I did not think the car was beeping, you know, like just beeping nonstop, like every edge of the car was too close to something. Had to fold the mirrors in to get through safely. After that, I think I probably went 93 in an 80 once we got clear of that. Just like,
doesn't even sound that bad, 93 in an 80. 93, but in an 80?
Right.
I mean, you go 77 in a 65?
Sure. Right.
93 in an 80, but proportionally is not as dangerous.
No. Last cross state road trip, like to Boston, we went for the Sturgill concert before Thanksgiving. I consistently was at like 12 to 13 miles an hour above the speed limit, blowing past cops with the radar both ways. Nobody ever moved on me a muscle. I'm like, I'm gold here. But Spain, I mean, I don't know.
You were sure it was a speeding ticket? Like, was it in Spanish? You would have to been able to read it.
Right. No, the text of it is in English.
Why?
I think they arrived at the conclusion that I was from America.
They have that?
Like, yeah, they found me. Well, we rented a car.
Well, okay.
So that's how they
But they have an English language version of the speeding ticket. Like, if you lived in Spain and got a speeding ticket in Buffalo, and they sent you the speeding ticket to your home in Spain, would it be in Spanish?
Good question.
I think it's a scam.
You know, I did tell my wife, I've not done anything on this yet. I saved. She said, don't throw that. I'm not going to throw it away. I have a summons from Spain. I'm going to hang on to that for the rest of my life.
You're going to tell everybody.
Whether I pay it or not. But there is even, there's a little, there's a QR code on it. Like, you know, like here, like do this and you can go to the website where you can pay us. But even that, I don't know. Like I've done some Googling today, and I think, you know, provided I don't, well, if I go back to Spain and try to drive again, then there could be trouble.
Oh, well, big if.
But otherwise, I don't think, I really think I can, I might be able to get away with this one. I might have, the Spanish authorities might not be able to do much. I mean, they may keep sending me,
I wouldn't want to test the Spanish authorities necessarily. Right?
That's good. That might be good advice.
Here comes Ross Tucker along to weigh in on the subject, even if he doesn't know it. We've sprung some random things on Ross, and at one point, like a month ago, I apologized to him. Like, you know what? I should prepare you for when we start with autographs or when we start with, I don't know, like bagels or whatever.
The spread at some football stadium. Yeah, right.
Like, I should probably prepare you, but I'm not prepared to do it. It's spontaneous. And he's like, dude, I love it. He's ready for anything. So here comes this one. At a speed of 93 kilometers per hour. Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL Insider. Next, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.